If you like weird history, true crime, haunted and paranormal, then pause the podcast you're listening to right now and subscribe to Ghost Town wherever you listen to podcasts. We also have a video component to our favorite Ghost Town episodes at youtube.com/Jason Horton. Episodes like The Los Feliz Murder House, The Toxic Lady, The Black Dahlia, Janis Joplin's Hotel Room, The Haunted Roosevelt Hotel, and more. Just go to youtube.com/Jason Horton. That's youtube.com/JasonHorton. And while you're there, please subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. Thank you. It's Friends Without Benefits. Friends Without Benefits. It's the Friends Without Benefits podcast. My name is Jason Horton. Welcome to the show. Today, I sit and chat with Lincoln Hoppe. He is a comedian. He's an actor. And you know what? He's a nice guy. Can that just be enough? Somebody being a nice person? I'll take that over credits. But I get very impressed by credits, and he's got plenty of them. He was in the new Stargate Origins. If you're a fan of Stargate, it's a new version of it. I don't know. I'm not super familiar with Stargate, but I do know the director that I've worked with, and she's great. I'll talk about her a little bit. I know casually one of the writers, so I thought it was pretty cool. And then Lincoln is in it. He's in a lot of it. So it's pretty exciting. He's in a episode of Scorpion, and then he's been in a bunch of stuff, like Touched by an Angel. I've never watched Touched by an Angel. Not my jam, but I do remember seeing the commercials. So he's been working a long time, and he's just a super nice guy, really funny improviser. He's letting me work with his improv group, The Society. Improv group, that's been fun because I haven't been doing as much improv. I've been doing more stand-up lately, but you can check them out at Lincoln Hoppe. That's Lincoln, HOPPE.com. We talk about his name a little bit because it looks like Hop, but it's Hoppe. Not like Mark Hoppus, right? He's Blink-182? I don't know. I'm just trying to sound relevant. I guess what is EDM, I call it rave music. So you know I'm out of touch. You know it. But listen, if you want to see some out-of-touch comedy, I'm doing a bunch of shows. By a bunch, as far as stand-up comedy is concerned, not a bunch, but a bunch for me on the October 8th at 8:30 p.m. or 8 p.m. I'll be at Ha Ha's in North Hollywood. And I think on the 15th, maybe, I am at Flappers in Burbank. That's probably 7:30. And then I'm performing at Cosmic Comedy on October 20th, 8 p.m. in Berlin, Germany. So that should be, that should be what it is. I'm really excited. I'm excited to be in Berlin and then going to Prague and then going to Copenhagen with my wife. It's going to be fun. We're going to document a lot of it, obviously, like on Instagram, which is the Jason Horton, but on my new travel blog, which is ghosttowntravels.com, which is part of, I guess, born out of the Ghost Town podcast. And right now, now's a good time to listen because we're in the middle of a 3-part series on Janis Joplin. It coincided with the anniversary of her death. Part one is out. Part two will be out on Wednesday. And then the third and final part of that will be the following Wednesday. And every Wednesday, Ghost Town Podcast, check it out. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever. And then you could check out the Instagram if you want to see some visuals on like abandoned, haunted, mysterious places. Check out Ghost Town Pod. I also worked with the Clunes again. If you're not familiar with the Clunes, you've probably seen their videos either on YouTube or Facebook. They've been on Ellen. And we did a little thing they do for Comedy Central, this thing called Mini Mox. It is a video series for Comedy Central. And maybe I play a stand-up comic. And maybe that's as close as I'm going to get to doing stand-up comedy on Comedy Central, is just being in a Comedy Central video playing a stand-up comedy. But you know what? I'll take it. You know what else I'll take? RX bars. Yes, RX Bar. I am still eating them. I've talked about them before. They are a staple in my diet. Love them. It's whole food protein bars with simple, real ingredients. They want to do it the right way. The power of transparency is important. The core ingredients are like egg whites for protein, dates to bind, nuts for texture. They list that right on the front. There's no trickery, you know? It's there. They're not trying to deceive you. It's not like you look at the back of some protein bars and there's like 8,000 ingredients. Let me tell you something. More is not necessarily better when it comes to that. Egg whites for protein, I like that source of protein. It's a good source of protein. I know what egg whites are. Very important. They're gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, all the frees that you want, whether it's sweet and savory, chocolate or fruit flavors. There's an RX bar for you. Sometimes I'm in the mood for chocolate. Sometimes I'm in the mood for a fruit flavor. They have plenty of flavors, and you will never tire of them. Sometimes I'm in the mood for both, and I have both because I can, because I'm an adult. Breakfast on the go, snack at the office to push you through that 3 p.m. slump. Throw one in your bag for the plane, which I will be doing on my trip to Europe. Toss one in your backpack for a bike ride or hike. Pre/post-workout snack. 14 delicious flavors. Mango pineapple, chocolate hazelnut, peanut butter berry, chocolate chip. There's apple cinnamon. There's plenty. And there's seasonal flavors too. They have a nut butter, honey cinnamon peanut butter, vanilla almond butter. They've got you covered. You don't have to just settle for regular old butters. They mix it up for you. And when you're eating something that's good and it's quality and it doesn't taste like chemicals, you don't mind eating them. And that's important. And if you would like to get 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/benefits and enter the promo code benefits at checkout. That's rxbar.com/benefits and enter promo code benefits at checkout for 25% off your first order. All right, let's get into my conversation with Lincoln Hoppe. That's for me? Yeah, all right. Okay, can you test my debit card?
Yes.
I just deposited a bunch of money. Can you test that?
That'd be great. I'd test that out.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. Cool, because I have no idea I only know how to make money.
Right.
And get rich and successful. I don't know how to spend it, though.
I can definitely help you with that.
Okay, cool.
I've got the other talent.
Yeah, you know how to spend? All
right. Yeah.
Well, you know what something I found out about you?
Oh, really?
A couple days ago, when we were at that Hollywood party.
Ooh.
At the Grove.
Right.
That you're from New Jersey.
I am from New Jersey.
When somebody is from New Jersey, they could do me harm, and I find out they're from New Jersey, it's like, oh. It's like you ever get cut off in traffic, and then you're like, I do not like this person. And then they give a little wave, and you're like, oh, all is well.
It's good.
It's like that. It's all good. But you're from the southern.
The southern end of New Jersey, very close to Philadelphia.
Yeah. So. And I'm from the northern end of New Jersey.
It's a small state.
It's a small state, but it's long. You take Garden State Parkway all the way down.
It's also, I believe, still the most densely populated state.
Yeah. It's a great state. I love it.
New Jersey!
What do you think about Springsteen?
Never my style of music.
Okay.
I was a little more into the Bon Jovi, but still not my exact.
Well, Bon Jovi kind of, I think, took a little of that working class stuff from Bruce Springsteen. That, like,
it had a harder edge.
You had a harder edge, yeah. So so Bruce was too weak for you.
No. I love everything that he stands for.
Right. Okay.
America.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't my style of music. Yeah. Like when I was growing up, I was in a heavy metal band and we played.
Oh, well, hold on a second. Yeah. Go on.
We played, you know, Iron Maiden, Led Zeppelin. We played some Bon Jovi, all those kinds of bands. Lots of.
What did you play?
I played guitar.
What kind of guitar did you play?
At the time, I played an Ibanez.
Of course.
Now I play.
You're from New Jersey. Right. You're playing Bon Jovi. You're playing an Ibanez.
Right.
Yeah.
But now I have a really nice Strat, so I enjoy playing.
You grew up.
I grew up.
Yeah, yeah.
I still have my Ibanez, though. I think it's over 30 years old.
Yeah.
It's got a maple neck, very dirty.
Was it neon green?
Neon yellow.
Neon yellow. Yeah, I mean, I know.
Yep.
That's very slippery when wet of you.
SG-550. Ibanez SG-550, I believe it was.
So, Iron Maiden, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, I was a little, because I was more into, when it came to coming like into like the punk and hardcore and stuff like that. So like the metalheads in school and like the punks sometimes didn't get along. But it took me a, I mean, Metallica is one of the first concerts I saw, one of the first ones I saw that were in that in 89, like one of the Injustice for All tour.
Right.
And it was amazing. It was great. But it just took me a little bit to get into like Iron Maiden, who I actually saw recently because I was like, I got to see them once. So I was a little late into the metal as far as like, I'm not talking about like Motley Crue or Twisted Sister. I mean, I was like, loved that because I was like a kid.
That was like pop.
That was pop. But like staring at like Motley Crue, Shout at the Devil, when you're, you know, 10 years old, you're like, whoa.
So evil.
It's so cool. And it just appealed to so many, like Van Halen, it appealed to like being, I think, at least for, you know, I can only speak as a male and being like young, but like starting to like, oh, I like things now. Because there's a point where you don't know what you like until you're like, oh, I'm conscious that I like things.
Yeah.
And like albums like that were some of those things.
Yeah. So my brother was the drummer.
Okay.
So he played drums and he still listens to Iron Maiden.
Okay.
And he just went to their concert.
Okay.
Just a few months ago. And I still like, I appreciate the music musically. But I don't listen to it. Every now and then, like maybe once a year, I'll put on Aces High you know, something.
Yeah.
But I definitely, like you said, I, instead of going, finding other kinds of music like metal, since I was already into that, I found punk and I found just classic rock. Yeah. And I, even in high school, I started to appreciate and like to play classic rock more than the metal. Metal's pretty fun to play.
It is super fun if you got the, you know what I mean? It's got the sound and
And if you listen to it now, it's not even that metal. Like it wasn't thrash or anything like that. But good times.
Was that in New
good
Jersey times. You were in that?
I was in New Jersey, yeah. I moved to New Jersey when I was 4.
Where were you born?
So Chicago.
Okay.
Right outside of Chicago.
Wow, all right. What made your family move to New Jersey?
My dad got a different job. He used to be a Jell-O salesman. And he got a different job working for a temporary services company as a manager.
Okay.
So we all moved out there, and then my parents stayed out there until just like, I guess it was 10 years ago.
Okay, so it's pretty, they held out.
They did. They stayed for quite some time.
Yeah. My dad's still there.
Yeah?
My dad's still there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, my mom.
Hi, Dad.
Yeah, yeah, he doesn't listen to this. He doesn't know. What does he care? If I told him this was making tons of money, he might listen.
He would listen.
Yeah, yeah, but other than that, he doesn't care about the arts. No, he does care about it. He's the one who got me into music. Like,
really?
In fact, I remember would stare at his record collection, like Billy Joel or Simon and Garfunkel or Jethro Tull.
Jethro Tull.
Bob Dylan, all the records. And I would just listen to the music and I'd stare at the records. Like, I just, there's only so much you can look at. But that was like really magical for me. And he got me into a lot of music. But I was like, hey, do you still have those records? He's like, no, I got, they're all scratched up. I was like, yeah, but I wanted to have them. You keep everything, it seems. Why don't you have the records? I don't understand. That's the one thing you probably should have kept.
Right.
You got these, all these weird papers. You know, I don't care about the weird papers. Give me the records. When did you leave New Jersey?
I left when I was 19. No. I was 18. I went to school. Went to school out in Utah, went to Brigham Young University, and then I went on a mission to Portugal. So I lived in Portugal for 2 years.
All right.
But basically, after I left for school, it was, I would just come back for 2 weeks at a time. So I left in like, 89.
Oh, wow.
Left in 89.
Before grunge hit. You're like, I got to get out of here before grunge hits. Then, you know what I mean? Like, metal is going to be in trouble. You're like, let me get out of here while the getting's good. Was going to Utah at what point? Because, I mean, you know, I understand New Jersey. I understand 1989. You know what I mean? I understand.
Yeah.
I know. I was there. You know, I mean, it was in New York, but I was like, I understand what it was like to be that age at that time.
Yeah.
Was Utah like the top school you wanted to go to, or did you have other things?
My parents both went there.
Okay.
And
okay,
so
cool.
It was the top school that I went to just because, you know, I didn't know much of anything else. I had a great, great experience there. Really fun time. In fact, that's how I got into acting and comedy was, when I got back from Portugal, I saw a flyer for a comedy troupe and I had just gone to an improv party. at someone's someone in my complex.
Is it a party with just people that happen to be improvisers, or was it a party based on improvisation?
It was a party where it was like, come over, we'll play some games. That was it.
Kind of like if you're on a team and you're like, hey, let's do a team building, exactly. bonding thing. Okay.
And I went because of a girl, of course.
Yeah.
And we played the same game for 3 hours, freeze tag. We played freeze tag for 3 hours.
Depending if the mood is right, you could play freeze tag.
Literally can.
If you have enough people,
yeah,
enough positions.
We may have played Hitchhiker for another half hour.
So you had some chairs set up? You got some chairs set up? Okay.
But so, and then literally the next day, I saw a flyer for a comedy troupe, and I was like, improv comedy troupe? I've done improv before, for all of 3 hours.
Sure.
Including watching other people do it. So I went.
And this is in Utah?
This was in Utah.
Okay.
And I think we were the first comedy troupe in Utah, at least improv and sketch comedy troupe.
Okay.
Probably the first improv troupe in the state. And it just blew up huge. And
you think people were at that point like, hey, like, we don't have any of this. Did they, you don't know what you're missing if it doesn't, did they not know what they didn't know? Or were they like, oh, we've been wanting something like this? Or was it just right place, right time?
I think it was a combination of all these things. The right place, the right time. Also, you know, we kind of targeted the freshmen because they had nothing else to do.
Right.
And like the first show was free and we thought, we hope 20 people show up. And we sold out, like 300 people showed up. And then we started charging $5 and we sold out like every show for pretty much for years. And then we started bouncing back and forth to bigger halls. And it was a great experience.
Is that group still going now?
It's not. But if you've ever heard of or seen Studio C... Studio C is a sketch comedy group. Yes, they do.
I think I've run into that for some reason in my...
Yeah, they have a lot of really funny stuff. It's produced by the BYU-TV, which is the school station. And they've got really funny stuff. But anyway, we did a pilot there before there was digital media. You know, we did a pilot on... actually, I guess maybe it was digital, like a beta. You know, we shot it on beta and it aired and everything, but there wasn't this proliferation of digital content where it was so easy and cheap to produce. So a lot of the people, I hadn't known any of the people who were in Studio C, but a lot of the people who were involved either directly or indirectly were... involved in some way with my comedy troupe. So it was kind of fun. We're definitely interconnected.
Yeah.
In some ways.
I mean, you paved the way. You know what I mean? Like you're, I don't know, the patriarch of it. That's what I'm going to say. I don't know.
We certainly had a good run. I think we went for 8 years.
Oh, wow.
And again, like sold out shows pretty much for all 8 years. And I was at school. I was studying advertising. And really, the comedy troupe became my full-time job. I was the head writer. Coming from never having done sketch comedy or improv, I became the head writer very quickly because nobody else wanted to do it. So, and we produced new shows every week. So we had 5 to 7 new sketches every week and then we interspaced that.
Kind of like what the Groundlings would do if you were part of that,
exactly,
or Second City, maybe.
It was exactly modeled on the Groundlings.
Okay.
Yeah, so some guy had, Eric D. Snyder, who was the founder, had seen the Groundlings a lot and basically did the same format, sketch and improv.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's exactly what we did. Sometimes, you know, we'd have 3 sketches in the show and lots of improv because we didn't
have a lot of freeze tag.
Ready. Right, exactly.
Tons of freeze tag.
But it was really fun. And a few years into that, I was like, I would like to get better at improv, and so
there's probably
a
limited
acting.
Amount of, because it's like Los Angeles, maybe New York or Chicago, or where there's just a couple of theaters going, and you have like in points of view of a lot of different schools of thought and performers to But when you're in your kind of same kind of bubble, I mean, it is a bubble because there's no you don't have that thing of like, hey, I wonder what an outside point of view is until, you said somebody went to the Groundlings, and I'm sure that kind of like, I don't know, brings a different level to it.
Yeah. In fact, at one point when I was running one of my troops out there, I commuted every week. I flew in to do Groundlings classes, and I did the beginning workshop the basic level, and then the audition level, and then the intermediate level while I lived in Utah and flew out every week.
That makes my me driving up from San Diego to LA to take IO classes seem lazy.
Still, that's a good drive.
It's brutal
for people who live 10 minutes away. That's still
it was a brutal like 3 hours each way. But I love, you know what I mean? When I got there, I was like, yes, this was worth it. Like, I really loved it. And I, you know, eventually had to move to Los Angeles because I was like, listen, this town needs another, needs someone like me. They don't have enough actors, enough comedians or improvisers. Like, they're just like, they need it, and I'm doing them a favor.
Exactly.
Did your parents also go on missions?
No, they didn't. My dad grew up in Germany. He was born in 1934. Okay. And so he was like six or so when the war was getting really up and going. So he was basically escaped from East Germany when he was 16 and came over to the States when he was in his 20s. So he did not. And then my mom didn't okay. either. But I did. My brother did. And now I have a son on a mission. He's okay. in Ohio. So it's pretty crazy.
My experience, and just to familiarize, and I'm not an expert, this is... it's part of the Mormon religion. Am I wrong?
Right.
Okay.
That's a nickname that comes from the Book of Mormon.
Yes.
But it's the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Okay, right. Yes. Remember I remember in New York, when I was living in New York, there were commercials for...
I bet. Yeah.
There was, yeah. So it was definitely one of those things that I heard a lot. But just because my experience, when I was living in San Diego, there were two, it was like Sister Jones and like another sister. Came around. And they came over for like Thanksgiving. So it was just, you know, we weren't with our families and they brought over pies and we all hung out and were great. And one of my friends fixed one of their bikes and they were super cool and super nice. Great. And, you know, for me, didn't have a lot of experience, you know, like when my mother converted to Judaism, I think she married my dad who was Jewish, and then I guess just went back to being Catholic. So it was a very kind of like Irish Catholic, like East Coast Jewish, like Russian Jewish. Like that was my, in New York, like those were the religions.
Right.
Catholic Jewish. I didn't know any, you know, there was no. Right. So my kind of first like actual experience were these two sisters, and they never asked for any, they, you know what I mean? They were truly there to just be like, they were on a mission, like there was serve or whatever it is. I mean, right. I can't speak for whatever. There was no, it didn't ask for anything, didn't try to convert or anything like that. They were just super cool. And, I don't know. I always got like a good, whereas as you know, not, I'm not a religious person, but there's been, you know, some things that rub people the wrong way
for sure.
On all sides. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, there's, you know, atheists that rub me the wrong way, right. Even if I agree with them or not, I was just like, this is, can you leave everyone alone? Can everyone just leave everyone alone? Let them do their thing. Everyone relax. But it was a very good, like, you know, even though I just didn't understand, but I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And I think, they always left me with like a good vibe
about it.
But I don't, you know, I admittedly don't know, you know, much else about it. But was that something when you were, you know, when you were banging your head with your Ibanez, where you're like, you know what I mean? Because you really were like, I mean, you were like New Jersey, South right. New Jersey, near Philly. You know what I mean? Like you were right. down there in it, banging your head, Bon Jovi. And then did you always know you were going to want to go on a mission? Or was that something where you were like, oh, okay, I'll do this?
You know, it, in a lot of ways, it's part of the culture.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I grew up learning about, you know, things like that God is our father. He's our mm-hmm. father. We call him our father in heaven, or, you know, and that model of he's not just some amorphous thing out there, but he's literally the father of our spirits. It gave me a real foundation for how to see the world. And so that was always there and always influencing my decisions. And like you said, with the sisters, it's just kind of it's a really good foundation. Like, hey, we're all brothers and sisters here. I want to treat people well, not just because I want to be treated well, but because whether they know it or not, we're in this together.
And it's not like it wasn't necessarily a thing where you're like, well, oh, I want to, you know, I want to fast track to heaven. Let me be do this nice thing.
Yeah,
you know,
not at all. It's it was much more an element, and not to say that there aren't some people who think that perhaps, but for me it was like this has really helped shape my life in a positive way that makes me want to do good for people, makes me want to live a purposeful life, and I would like to share that with people
without imposing on anyone's. You know what I mean? Like, there's just listen, we live in Los Angeles. There's right. people certain in kind of in your face about like, hey, you need this. Hey, you need that. And if you don't, it's like, why don't you know what I mean? Like, right. like online, there's like confrontation. And I'm kind of just like a do no harm kind of guy. I'm like, do your thing. I don't bother you. You don't bother me. We're all going to be, we can all be happy.
Right.
But did that like, because the thing is, you're like, you're listening to Iron, you know, I'm taking a very kind of like TV movie thing of this where you're like, because Iron Maiden is like, even for me, like kind of growing up, I was like, ooh, this is bad. Like, you know what right. I mean? Like, I grew up kind of like, I had my first drink at 33, and people always ask me if I was either recovering alcoholic or it was my religion or it was Mormon or whatever. I was like, I was just straight edge. Like, that was part of my, it just wasn't part of my culture.
Yeah.
And it really, I moved, and then even when I did, it wasn't for, I was single and it was fine, but it's like, it never really stuck with me. You know what I mean? I just don't. And I don't know how that fits in with you or you know, whatever, but people just thought that I was either sober or Mormon. And I was like, no, I guess I don't do, which is kind of weird. I guess I don't really blame them. And I was just like, yeah, and I didn't have any issues with it. I wasn't like, don't do that. It's wrong. It was like, you do it. I don't, whatever. I don't, you know, the world goes round and round. But right. People kind of just assumed that I was, even though I looked Jewish, you know, it was a little bit confusing. So you're in Utah. Did you live out there past school?
I did. I stayed for a few, I got married like right after I graduated.
And did you meet your wife in?
Met my wife at school. I dated her roommate first.
Ooh.
Yes. It's a saucy tale that we won't go into.
Moving right through.
But so we got married and then she still had a few more years, but I was graduated and I was still running this comedy troupe, you know, as the director and really found a lot of fun and purpose from making people laugh and helping people unwind and just enjoy themselves.
And you were finding acting with this as well at this point?
Yeah. When I, about a few years in, I was thinking, you know, I'd love to get better at doing improv. I should take an acting class. And so I did. I took one of the school acting classes. And I'm like, this is kind of awesome. And I did more. And then I started auditioning for student films. And I started getting parts in student films. And then I got an agent out there. And I started going out for TV shows and movies. And, you know, I did a bunch of stuff. I was in Touched by an Angel. There was a show
That's a TV show, Touched by an Angel, right?
Yeah. TV show. It was the most popular TV show at the time.
Yeah.
It was like
I remember.
I don't
think I watched it, but obviously I remember it in a cultural sense.
Yeah.
And they filmed that out there?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I did Everwood. Actually, I booked Everwood from out here, but had to fly back to Utah. Shoot that. That was with Treat Williams and Marcia Cross, amazingly talented actors. Super fun. I had a scene with both of them.
And what would you say your like your jam was? Like, what did you play like in a lot of these?
Well, now I play mostly German soldiers.
Right.
And German scientists.
Yeah.
But I also play, you know, kind of nerds and dorks and
it's science teachery
exactly.
stuff. Yeah.
Lots of teachery stuff, professors, as well as, you know, high school teachers or substitutes. So a lot of my social media comedy kind of centers around me being a dumb teacher or kind of a fun or wacky dad, because I do have 5 kids. So the dad part comes pretty easily. But and I do gravitate towards comedy. But again, in all these World War II movies that I'm in, usually drama slash action, which I really enjoy. And I trained at Playhouse West, which is a Meisner school. So, you know.
Is that in Beverly Hills?
No, that's Beverly Hills Playhouse.
But, okay, yeah, I'm confused.
Yeah, Playhouse West is in North Hollywood. So there's a few different studios.
Oh, okay, yeah.
There's one on Lancashire.
Right,
and there's 2 others on Magnolia, right close to Cahuenga. Great school.
Yeah.
James Franco was one of the, you know, one of the students that really, you know, he thanked Playhouse West in his Oscar speeches and all that kind of stuff. So it kind of got known a little bit more through that. But it's a very good school. It's founded by Robert Carnegie and Jeff Goldblum, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, they're okay.
Yeah, they're very talented guys.
Yeah. All right. It's good enough for them. I mean, what am I going to say?
Right.
So at what point are you in Utah, are you like, hey, I'm going to take this to the next level? Or what was the impetus to get you from, I guess, Utah to Los Angeles?
Yes. I had done a bunch of films and, you know, was just thinking, now I have some stuff that I can show. And I have stuff on my resume.
Which is more than, I mean, a lot. I mean, a ton of people move out and like, I have nothing. I don't know what's going on.
Absolutely.
But here I am.
Absolutely.
And so you went in guns blazing
It was very helpful, and probably not as helpful as I would have liked, but it was helpful. It gave me a lot of confidence, too. So when my oldest son was just getting ready to start kindergarten, we were like, look, now's a good time. If we want to move, we won't have to change schools if we go. And that's pretty much what we did. We up and went. And
that was a pretty, like, the decision where there was no pushback. Was there any, like, you know, because it's, you know, picking up and moving to Los Angeles. Was there ever, or was it an easy, like, yeah, wait, we're going to do this. This is a great idea.
It was kind of the plan. Kind of the plan. And my wife always says, you know, I thought you'd grow out of the acting thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, yeah, let's do it.
She's still saying that?
Yes.
Oh, again? You're doing it? All right. Yeah, all right. Well, acting, good. Do it again, acting, I guess. Yeah. So when did you come to, how long you, I'm trying, when did you come to LA? I guess I'm trying to see how.
I think it was like 2000, early 2000.
Okay.
I
mean, that's relatively recently compared to...
Yeah, it's not too long.
Yeah.
Maybe like 2003 or 2004.
Okay, that's pretty... I mean, I moved to from New York to San Diego in 2002 and to LA in 2006, so it's a similar time. Good time as any, I suppose.
Yeah, it's great.
So when you came out here, though, what was your plan for, like, you know, surviving, I guess, right? Like, with, like, hey...
No plan.
No plan, right?
No plan. Just
jump and the net will appear kind of stuff.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And, you know, I was fortunate. We got some jobs right away. But as you know, as an actor, it's always up and down. It's always like, even when you're making enough income to live comfortably on, there's still 1 week where you kind of feel like you're just getting by. And then a few months later, ooh, here's a big check. You know, so no matter what,
you have to just kind of hang on if you want to make it, I think.
Exactly.
Good weeks, good months, bad months.
Yeah.
Great months. Yep. And then you wonder, is this it?
Yep. Like, I've had a great year. It's been a fantastic year for me. I was a series regular on a show called Stargate Origins.
Which we know, Bryce, is it?
Right.
Is, what's her name?
She was the director.
Bryce,
I can't think either.
It was not. I just looked at her Facebook. She's a great director. She directed the Stargate. Stargate
Origins.
Origins, yeah. And she was a crew. I mentioned she was would crew on my YouTube videos at the YouTube space, and then she put me in one of her. She did maybe she had a they had a thing maybe with like it was like that Brian Grazer Ron Howard like. Vehicle of digital stuff, and you know, she put me in one of those, and it was no surprise. She was, I could tell all those. You could just tell when all these kids, like they go to USC or whatever it is. I was like, you guys are all gonna be amazing,
yeah.
And I'm gonna be emptying your garbage one day, and I'm honored to do it. So when I saw that she was doing that, and then I saw that you were in it, I was like, oh, okay, I know.
Right. Mercedes Bryce Morgan.
Morgan, right? That's it. Yes. She went by, but now she's Bryce. That's what guy kind of, that's why I knew her as Morgan's went by Bryce, which is a rock and roll name.
Yeah.
Cool name. Cool director name.
Great name. So that was so fun.
And that was, you know, because I'm not really in that world, but I know fan bases are pretty rabid when it comes to that. I saw that online. Another dude from I.O. was one of the writers on it, I think.
Yeah, Justin Michael Terry.
Yeah, super nice.
I
just know him from I.O. I think we did a BuzzFeed thing together. So I was like, this is so cool that like people are doing it. And then I saw that you were...
a German soldier.
Now, do you... Because it's like one of those things that are like science fiction that has like a fan base, do you leverage that in any way? Do you go to like conventions?
We've done a few.
Yeah.
Yes. I wasn't able to go to Comic-Con this last time. They showed Stargate Origins, you know, a feature cut version of it on the battleship out there.
Yeah.
And we were driving out and I had an emergency at home with the kids, so we had to turn around and come back. But that would have been so amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's lots of stuff. Connor Trinneer was in it, who's had a great part, of course, on Star Trek Enterprise. He played Commander Tucker. And so amazing working with him, because he's just really good and brought so much experience and just a, you know, good person.
And was that a pretty long job? Because it's a bunch of episodes.
It was a few months, yeah.
A few months, yeah.
Several months. And, I forgot where I was going with that, but
you were just thinking about being a.
I was just thinking about being remembering back.
Yeah, just kind of just reminiscing.
But there's a lot of behind the scenes trailers and stuff. Like I was also officially authorized to write a blog from the actor's perspective. I was like the only actor who was allowed to post anything.
Yeah,
and I had to send it to their to Stargate Command, and they had to check everything.
Vetting, whatever.
They had to send it to the lawyers and make sure it was all okay. And those are all up on my website. So. I'm still like the only authorized person to speak about it. It's kind of fun. But
where's your action figure?
I know.
Where's the action figure? I'm putting it out
there.
It's coming. Where is it?
It's coming.
I want that action figure.
Me
too. Weird? I want
it.
Well, one action figure of you just sitting there on my desk looking at me.
Yeah, my friend Mark Pellegrino, who played Jacob on Lost, he's an amazing actor, just insanely talented. He has a few action figures of him. It's pretty cool. So,
but also you do a lot of theater here, a lot of you know, legit theater.
Just finished doing God of Carnage, which was really fun with some amazingly talented actors, all at Playhouse West. Yeah. It was a Playhouse West show. Holly Gagné and Kathleen and Randy were so fun to work with. And then I also did an episode of Scorpion this year, which is a CBS show.
Okay, yeah.
That was really fun. You know, went in, auditioned, just had a few lines. And by the time I came in to do the part, they had put me in like 14 scenes.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't speak in all of them.
Right.
But it was
for
like,
one episode?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Pretty much in the whole thing.
It was a hostage situation kind of thing.
Yeah, so, so you're there.
But it was great because they were like, yeah, okay, Lincoln, let's have you do this. And they would keep putting me right in the frame, even though I wasn't written specifically into
sure.
the scene.
Yeah.
And all that good stuff.
Well, that's fun.
It's really fun.
You also, you do improv out here.
Yes. And so do you.
Well, yeah, you let me rock and roll with you guys.
Guys,
which
Jason
is very kind.
Is a very good improviser. Super fun to play with. So Kirby Hayborn, who I run the troupe with, it's the Society Comedy Troupe.
He's in so many commercials that I've seen.
He's in so much.
I feel like it's one of those things where I was like, why is this guy in every commercial? And I was like, oh, hey, you're that guy's in every commercial.
Right.
I mean, I haven't auditioned for commercials in a while just because it's always in like Santa Monica.
Right.
And then I got to go. And it was never really, because I would go in for dad stuff. But I, age-wise, was the dad thing. But people were like, we just don't buy that you're a dad. I was like, I don't really buy it either. So you're getting all those parts. Seeing it, I was just like, oh, this guy's in every commercial.
Yeah, he is also, he's one of the leads in The Three Stooges. He played Teddy, who's married to, what is her name?
That one
Sophia
that
Vergara.
Did that come out?
5 years ago. It's a Farrelly Brothers movie.
I think I may have submitted a self-tape for that.
Oh, that's awesome.
I just kind of remembered that. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I mean.
He's the character who Sophia Vergara hires someone to kill.
Okay,
because
yeah.
He's a millionaire.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's great in the movie. It's a really fun movie.
And, yeah, everyone in the group is super funny.
We were talking about you just today because we had an away show. We flew out to Utah to do a musical improv.
Oh, wow.
Which was great.
Was it a corporate thing?
Corporate
thing. Nice. The corporate things
shows.
Are nice.
But on the way back, we were talking about you. And I was like, how you like working with Jason? He's like, he's great. He's so fun.
Oh, thank you.
It adds a different, a different sense of timing and comedy. And of course you played in a show with us.
I did
like
that was
last month.
Super. That was the first time I've done a show because I, like, again, like I hit improv hard for about 14 years, coaching, and like at I.O. I would, you know, coach the Harold teams and direct the sketch groups, and then coaching some UCB groups. I just got really kind of burnt out about a lot of different things, and then even this podcast took like a year break. Listen, if you do podcasts, don't take a break if you don't need to.
Don't take a break.
It's a bad idea for the numbers, people. It takes a second to come back. But it was just super fun because, you know, I'll start off doing short form in San Diego and loved it. And everyone was so nice. And there was people there.
Yeah.
What? That's always nice.
It's amazing that people show up and pay money to see you have no idea what you're about to do.
Absolutely no idea. And even when I'm done, I was just like, I don't know what I just did. But it's there and it's gone.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's
disposable. It's disposable theater.
It's truly something out of nothing.
Yeah,
you know.
It is. And that's part of what makes it so fun. It's also part of what makes it, when you're in the audience, so energetic and so exciting, is that once the moment's gone, it's gone. When the show's done, you'll never see it again. Nope. You know?
Unless you watch it back and you're like, this isn't that good. You watch things back and you're like, kind of like, this is not as good as
you know, this is crazy, though, because we filmed one of our last shows. And, you know, when we do the musical comedy section, for those of you who don't know, we do... improvisation comedy, of course, means we make it up as we go along, but we also do a musical section, which we make up a plot from start to finish. It's usually about anywhere between 20 minutes and an hour long, depending on how much time.
And I haven't seen the long version. I've seen your short versions of it. And it's like pretty, it's always, musical theater is always, improvised musicals are always really remarkable.
It's mind-boggling.
It's just like, wait a minute. That's a hit song to me. You just sang, as far as I'm concerned.
When they're bad, it's kind of impressive.
Yeah,
but when they're good, it's like insane.
Because I think if it's bad and you kind of own the fact, you're like, "Hey, this bad is my best right now,"
right?
And you're owning it, and people see that they're just like, it's relatable a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, if you act bored or you're dismissive of it, nobody wants to see. You don't want to see a bored person. So that's why I just embrace everything that, like, you have to, because there's so many other people. I've always learned, like, there's so many improvisers, especially in Los Angeles, and there's very little stage.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's good, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, there's you know, whatever. There's different levels of
strengths,
different people.
Strengths, weaknesses, yeah.
Different. Some people do it for a year and are amazing. Some people do it for 20 years and they're just okay. Whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's like, appreciate the fact that you're here because someone else isn't.
Yeah.
And I've never, ever, I've never taken that part for granted. Even though, you know, whatever. There's always some politics at some of the theaters, this and that, which are just structural. They're not, it's not creative. But other than that, it's like just appreciating it. And it's the society.
Yes. The society comedy. It's societycomedy.com.
Yeah. So.
But we
gotta
just
get that
put
plug
out
in there. Gotta get that plug
That's
in there.
That's right.
Gotta get that plug in there.
I just cut together a little promo video, but in doing that, I had to watch through the musical. And it's like, particularly the beginning and like all throughout, I watched mostly the beginning. It was mesmerizing. Like, usually improv doesn't translate well to
watching. But I can see why the musical would, because
it's
so, there
it
is
has
music.
Something more.
Yeah.
It just does. And in this, I'm going to post the whole, at least this whole beginning of the musical pretty soon. It's mesmerizing. This girl, Kelly Lohman, is so amazing. She sings this solo based on a suggestion from the audience. And then the whole rest of the musical, you know, the rest of the scenes and the songs all go in that direction. But not only is it mesmerizing to watch back on tape, but watching the cast sitting at the side, watching her, everyone's just like in this magical place. Like, I can't believe this is happening.
Because
we're
sometimes
watching
you're on
something
important. Even when you're on the stage, you're like kind of like in awe of what's happening. Like, not just waiting for you to go. Like, I just want to insert myself in this, where you're just up there. That's what I always loved about being in groups, where I'm up there and I'm like, I'm a huge fan of them. And I'm on the stage, like, I'm part of it. But I was like, sometimes I separate myself from it because I've become such a huge fan of, I've been fortunate enough to play with have a lot of really great teachers and perform with a lot of really great performers that have gone on to be very successful. And I've always been fortunate of that. But
also something, an aspect, this is how we initially know each other, is you have a pretty bumping online presence.
Yes.
Which is not, which I would say, bumping. Yeah. I'd say bumping.
I like
I'd
that say bumpin'. Word.
Yeah. Rocking, cool. Bumping.
I'm not hip like the kids.
No.
I'm not, as you'd say, lit.
No, you're not.
Was
you're
that
not,
2 years ago?
I don't know. I don't know if you're not lit. Yeah. Is it fire? I don't know. I can't know. I can't keep up.
I don't know.
But you know, for especially where a lot of people, were you like an early adopter? It sounds like you were kind of early adopter of like technology and
I love technology. Yeah. I mean, I was on the internet before it existed. Yeah. You know, when it was, you had to dial up from mm-hmm. your computer directly to another person's computer and only one person could be on the website. Right. It was called a bulletin board, you know, but then I dropped it, you know, just like you said with the podcast. Yeah. Step away and everything changes. I started Musical.ly about 2.5 years ago, which is now TikTok.
And that traditionally for people, it was people lip syncing, right. At least, you know, it's and known for being a very like almost born out of Vine in a way,
for
which
sure.
was a mixed age
15
thing.
Second loop instead of the.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And but that has, as far as I know, is kind of ages up. You know,
yes,
I think ages up. I'm sure that business wise, they're like, no, we want more people to use it, and we don't want to be any limitations
right.
on who could use it.
Yeah, it was almost all lip sync, and I stepped in. My friend Eric Artel showed it to me and said, "Be careful, you'll get addicted if you start posting." And I just saw how people could lip sync your comedy, so I thought, what if I did some comedy skit? Well, we don't call them skits, but they do. Call them comedy sketches because
right,
they sound
yeah.
more fancy. What if I did these comedy sketches and people could re-lip sync them back? And so I wasn't doing lip syncs. I was creating things
yeah.
for people to lip sync.
They would reuse those or remuse. Those originals.
Yes.
So that's how I got my, I would just do these little kind of bam, 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 bam.
Yeah.
And that was it. And then people would, watching people lip sync to your voice is very strange.
It is.
Especially when it's different ages. It's like a 13-year-old, a 50-year-old,
yeah.
you know what I mean? A 9-year-old, a 26-year-old, especially if it's, you know, if it's a pretty popular little video.
But it's such a great way for them to engage with you.
Yeah.
And that's what clicked for me was like, wow, instead of just pressing a like button or making a comment, they can literally act this back out and then post it.
Did you ever feel, because, you know, I come from, you know, digital, you know, I was pretty relatively early on in the YouTube world.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to fortunately make a living sort of born from that. But I was always, you know, I was a late bloomer in everything. Like I started doing, you know, comedy officially at like 29 or 30. So even though I've, you know, used to do like little videos, stuff like that, but mm-hmm. on an official level, like 29 or 30, which is pretty late. You know what I mean? A little late to get started. So you're starting from YouTube, but do you ever get any pushback from people because like you are in somebody who's an age-wise atypical to
yeah.
whoever's on there, you know what
yeah.
I mean? I mean I've gotten that pretty much always.
For sure.
Yeah, never didn't get it.
Absolutely. I'd never really heard it until I started posting comedy stuff to Musical.ly again, which is now mm. TikTok. And you know, all these comments, these kids have no filters and they'd be like, "You're too old. Ew, get off."
Yeah.
You know, and it would be so funny because I'd look and see that, you know, oh, there's 500 comments on this.
Yeah.
You know, 95% of them are positive, but then there's always some kid who's just so like, this is for kids. Get off.
Yeah. But they're just being who they are. I mean,
they just don't know that
yeah,
that's
they're being
rude.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Or they don't care. Or maybe it's not really rude. It's just to our generation, that's
sure, yeah.
I don't know, but for sure, there's always been age things, and I was always just able to say, hey, I'm doing this because I'm a professional actor,
right?
And
you're not trying to be a 13-year-old.
I wasn't lip syncing.
Yeah,
anything,
yeah.
You know, it was like, this is another way for me to make comedy and to make people laugh, because I didn't go to film school, but I went with the people who went to film school, and I kind of learned that, you know, if you're going to make a film, it takes you like 6 months to a year. And it was just a liberating thing to say, wow, I can do something short and I can shoot it in 30 seconds and post it in another 2 minutes.
Like now.
And make someone laugh today. And that was completely game changing.
Now, I was kind of a lot of actors would ask me about this because I've always had like a pretty decent online presence. I've
yeah, you have great.
I've always just, you know, I have a marketing kind of background. I've like things like advertising, the psychology of why. Like, why would an Instagram post get a like? You know, why would a tweet get a retweet? Whatever the case may be, I've always just been into the, and I've pretty good at analytics and I'm like YouTube certified. I do all that stuff. So I've always interested in like the back end. But has your online presence given you a leg up when it comes to like the traditional media stuff?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm sure it works both ways. Like, it may have hurt me on some certain projects. Like, I was up for an HBO show. I didn't end up getting it, but I did notice that the casting director checked my LinkedIn profile.
Oh.
And so
do you have like, how's your LinkedIn?
It's not bad.
Mine's pretty good.
But it certainly highlights my working with social media.
And you don't think they like that part?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't get that job. I was on hold and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But certainly, like, the whole way I got Stargate was I met the manager who submitted me for Stargate. I met through Musical.ly. I met her at VidCon. Mm. And we started talking, and she's like, I've seen some of your stuff. It's really hilarious. My son does stuff, too. Her son is really hilarious, too. Zach Rice. He's like a 14-year-old kid who's, like, doing killer stand-up. Just at his first stand-up show. Anyway, super talented. So we started working because of the social media stuff, which then she submitted me to Stargate, and I sent in an audition, and then I went in for callbacks, and I got the part. And that led to Scorpion and all these other things that have come through. So as indirect as it may have been, you know, it was the social media that at least guaranteed my audition for Stargate, which...
And in your talent takes you the rest of the way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure they do hire people based on numbers alone. Obviously, they do that.
I would never get hired on numbers alone because, you know, I'm not... I think I have about 1 million followers across all social media. But, like, you know, a bulk of the... Like, I have 430-some thousand on Musical.ly, and then everything else is, like, 10,000 here, 200,000 there.
LinkedIn.
Right.
Got that LinkedIn. Numbers, LinkedIn
you
numbers.
Know it. Yeah. You know it. So no one's ever going to call me for numbers until I get, you know, up past that million.
But let's just say there's two of you types, you know, they might look at you and be like, well, they're both equally as great, but this guy already has an online presence and that might be some instant promotion. Right. You know what I mean?
It's, yeah, I think project, it does happen that way.
It doesn't hurt.
But there's also something to be said about if all things are equal – and one person is out there every day creating content and posting, and the other person is
waiting.
It's like, who would you go with? Yeah. You know, go with someone who's trying to make everything work and use their talents and collaborating with other people.
It's a smart move because then, you know, whatever the project is, you're not starting from zero promotion wise. You don't have to start.
Right.
You know, if it's, you know, 10 people that already have a big online presence.
Right.
There you go. You have your, you know.
And I'm a total believer that any project should be hiring talent and charisma and honest acting over any kind of numbers. But all things being equal. Someone who's out there moving and shaking and trying to get things done and move different fronts forward at the same time has an advantage.
So what's next for you? Like, what are we?
I have a pilot that I'm doing. Actually, we're doing a web series that's going to be edited together into a pilot. There's a group called Third String Kicker.
Yeah, you could find them on my YouTube channel. You could find me on theirs.
They're from what I remember. Very funny. Yeah. And it's fun because I do mostly clean comedy, and some of the things that they're most famous for are skating that line of like not clean, but you know. But anyway, that's going to be pretty fun. I also have a few pilots that I've been pitching around, and I've had some interest on a few of them. It was very exciting. Yeah. And I narrate a lot of audiobooks, too.
What's the work like on that? Because I always think, like,
it's probably what you would imagine. It's sitting in a room, in a booth, sitting in front of a microphone like this for hours upon hours upon hours upon hours a day.
And what do you do certain kind of books?
Yeah, I do mostly first person narration. Usually I play troubled teens.
Oh, okay.
or teens with unique gifts.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess if I just, you could be a trouble too.
I have a youthful voice.
You do, you yeah. Know? It's
not
like
always
a,
if I talk. In my yeah, head, you know, but usually I'm kind of bright and energetic with right, my voice, yeah. And but a little off or a little different.
Yeah.
And so that's, I'm assuming that's why I get kind of these troubled teens. But some of these books that I've been able to narrate are just beautiful, wonderful books. So that's really fun. And then also, of course, the improv world, the Society Comedy, which I'm hoping we're going to have you in another show very soon.
Listen, I'm ready. Put me in coach whenever you're ready. I will be there.
In fact, we have footage of you from that live stream show that did.
Oh.
And I think we're going to be posting that to improvwizards.com.
Improvwizards.com.
Improvwizards.com. Yeah. So that's Eric Artell and I do a teaching course where we teach improv. I teach at school, but we also are doing an online course. And that is part of that is going to be on there. So
it's going to be like, don't do this. Don't see.
No,
this
it's just the whole show. Okay. We're just putting up the whole show.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. Warts and all.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there was some characters.
It's fun. Yeah.
There's always less funny stuff in improv shows.
Sure.
Or maybe even not even less funny, but like less funny to the audience.
Right. But you need it to, you know, sometimes you got to get to A to C. The B's got to be a little bit, you know, a little setup.
Right.
Little setup.
Right.
And where we can find you online?
So my website is lincolnhoppe.com, and that's hope with two P's.
Yeah.
H-O-P-P-E. And then, of course, societycomedy.com and improvwizards.com. Mm-hmm. And all of my social media is my name, Lincoln Hoppe, again.
And is that, what is that? P's. What is that?
German.
It's German. Yeah. Okay.
I've been thinking about going by Hop and just dropping the P and the E because most people call me Hop anyway.
I don't know why it sounds, what am I thinking of? Like more like Scandinavian, like it's Swedish or something.
Right. It's just a point of confusion.
Yeah.
And that's fine in an audition. But if you're trying to get someone to find you on social media, confusion does not help.
No,
they'll try
branding.
Spelling your name once.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it. So that's a possibility. Maybe I'll be Lincoln Hop soon. Who knows?
Ooh, well, I guess during part two we'll find out.
Right.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.